Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name's Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all your texts, all your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Our episode today is sponsored by rockauto.com. Go to rockauto.com and mention Locked On Bulls as who sent you all the parts you car will ever need, rockauto.com. Matt, welcome back. Happy hump day and Wednesday to you. I know we touched on this last week because of the documentary or the 30 for 30 that came out, but today marks the actual 10-year anniversary of the decision.
Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Thoughts, and how are you?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? I'm doing well. It turns out that LeBron had it right the first time. It was just two. So, you know, we talked about the podcast that was done from our old pal Nick Friedell and Brian Windhorst with the Hoop Collective, harkening back to the decision and the column by Windhorst that went along with that. And then in the coming days, we've seen more coverage and content about the decision and the 10-year anniversary. Casey Johnson wrote a piece for NBCSportsChicago.com. And then for Bleacher Report, Rick Bucher, who definitely is a guy who has made headlines for his headlines or some of the things that he's said covering the NBA in his career. Sometimes he's right, sometimes he's wrong, but he's always out there saying crazy stuff. But there were a couple of interesting quotes from Jerry Reinsdorf, which I'm not sure, it wasn't clear when Jerry said these things and when when Rick got these quotes for this column talking about the decision, whether it was soon after the fact or if these were people, you know, if he was interviewing these people 10 years after the fact. But either way, it was pretty interesting. And the one that stuck out to me and the one that I was, you know, kind of like poking and teasing Jerry about on Twitter earlier today was the one where he knew that LeBron was at least going to leave Cleveland. He wasn't sure where he was going yet, but he knew he was leaving because Jerry told LeBron, "I think you should stay in Cleveland." And then LeBron said, "Hey, you know, I'm not from Cleveland. My family's not from Cleveland. We're from Akron." And that was what tipped Jerry Reinsdorf off to think, "I think LeBron's leaving Cleveland." But as a Bulls fan, reading that, it was just like, maybe it was taken out of context and maybe it was not as stupid as it sounded when it comes to the chairman and owner of an organization who was actively trying to pitch LeBron in that summer free agency of 2010. But to hear that quote was just like, it was just such a classic Jerry thing and such a classic Bulls thing. The greatest star in the game, you're pitching him in free agency and you're also giving him some advice on the side to stay where he is.
What are you doing, bro?
It's unbelievable. What? You're the owner of the Chicago Bulls. You just had six championships less than 10 years prior to this. And you're telling the second coming that maybe he should return to his home state and go back and play with Cleveland. I get it's a nice, maybe one-off type of comment, but shit like that can change people's minds. The idea that he didn't think about that or was just trying to be cordial about it, I guess maybe tipped him off that he realized that he wasn't going to go back to Cleveland when he made that kind of statement. But man, I feel like if you're in that room pitching and it's anybody but Jerry Reinsdorf and somebody makes a comment similar to that and then LeBron chooses, like he did, go to Miami, I got to imagine you're fired. You're fired if you're that close. If you're that close to signing LeBron and potentially bringing Wade and Bosch with you, and then you make a comment to him in a social gathering right after your business meeting saying, hey, maybe you should stay in Cleveland. And then he actually does that. Think about the situation if he actually did that. I mean, anybody yeah, but Reinsdorf.
It would be way worse if LeBron did stay, whether or not it was because of Jerry Reinsdorf's advice. But you're right. That would have made it worse.
Oh, man. That's tough, man. It's tough to relive that.
One of the other things I thought was interesting, and it wasn't in Rick's piece, it was in Casey's piece, but that, what's the name of that dude? I'm blanking. Okay, so it's William Wesley. Tibbs had hired William Wesley, a.k.a. Worldwide Wes, who Leon Rose brought to New York in an advisory role in June, as his agent. Multiple reports at the time indicated Wesley was trying to steer James to the Bulls, because he was also an advisor to James. And apparently, William Wesley's insistence upon LeBron joining the Bulls became a point of contention. Or at least that's what Casey Johnson wrote in his column in his 10-year anniversary of the decision piece, which I thought was weird because I had never heard that before. The fact that there was like this rift that was kind of growing between LeBron and this dude, William Wesley, and Wesley's insistence upon LeBron steering him towards the Bulls was actually a thing that was fracturing their relationship and may have caused LeBron to not have the Bulls atop his list. We all know all the other factors in the whole, like trying to clear a third spot and trying to trade Dang and all that stuff. But that was another interesting detail that I was never aware of before, especially the fact that it was someone who was a shared member of council for not only LeBron James, but Tom Thibodeau. And those two seemed to really hit it off when Tibbs was pitching LeBron.
I was going to say, and I think Leon Rose hired William Wesley this summer, right? Am I correct on that? Yeah,
he did.
Mm-hmm. So that was like their stepping stone. Even last year, Leon Rose was hired, right? In an effort to see if they could pull KD towards the Knicks. I'm right about that, right? Or maybe it was KD. Somebody close to KD's camp received a job in the Knicks front office. There was some connection. I'll have to go back up and look up the name. I think it was somebody in KD's camp that ended up getting a job in the Knicks front office. And everybody kind of looked at, flashed eyes that way to say, okay, maybe Durant is actually going to go to the Knicks. And he's moved all his business out there. But that is interesting. That is very interesting. I was thinking about this too. I listened to Zach Lowe have Chris Bosch on his podcast yesterday on the Lowe Post.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Lowe and Bosch was really good.
They only mentioned the Bulls for maybe about 10 seconds when they were talking about classic matchups in the playoffs, and Bosch described it as a bar fight. And I think that was a perfect way to describe it. I was hoping that they were going to get into him and Joakim going back and forth at each other, especially in some of those series, but they focused more on the Pacers side of things, which in reality, that's probably more of the story as far as their build goes. But I found it fascinating him talking about guarding Tim Duncan in some of these series and just being like, man, that guy was built and he would beat the shit out of me. And it was just not even fair. So little things like that hearing Chris Bosh talk about was very, very cool. But I do wish that they spent a little bit more time on the Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's The Pacers kind of became the de facto Eastern Conference rival to Miami just because, they pushed them pretty hard and maybe unexpectedly in a couple of those playoff series. People expected that to be Bulls Heat, especially after the Big Three were formed and the Bulls have a new coach, a rising star who's the youngest MVP in league history, and Derrick Rose, and all these nice complimentary pieces, and the number one seed in the East. Bulls Heat was gearing up to be an amazing rivalry for like the better part of a decade. And they still did meet twice in the playoffs. The Heat bounced them in five games both times, once in the conference finals, once in the conference semis. But because of Rose's injury, that never really materialized, and the Pacers just kind of became like the de facto rival. When they pushed the Heat to seven games in 2013, they were only a 49-win team that year in a full the 12-13 season, not the lockout shortened season. 49-win team, and they pushed the Heat to 7 games. And, you know, Paul George was a rising star, and there were some rivalries, you know, between some players on those teams. But it's a shame that that was just kind of not quite as electric, because not only is Indiana a small market team compared to the Bulls, and Bulls Heat would have just had that much more national, you know, electricity to it. But the fact that that rivalry may have been bigger than it was were it not for Derek's injury is just a real disappointment.
I think about, too, a lot, the idea that the Bulls should have been that team. The Bulls should have been that team instead of the Pacers. And for whatever reason, Bosch goes into it, so I suggest you guys listen to it, too, if you're a huge basketball junkie, especially just that the era that just happened 10 years ago. It's kind of cool to relive that. And he talked about the differentiating styles that the Heat wanted to play and the Pacers wanted to play. And it reminds me of a lot of what the Bulls want to do now, similarly to what the Heat were running, was Jim Boylan wanted to play tough, grinded out basketball, but he also wanted to play at a fast pace. And Bosch described that as the way that the Heat wanted to play too. And the Pacers wanted to slow things down, but also play banging bodies. And I'm like, well, if the Bulls are trying to play that way, it makes sense because it has had success, but you don't have three stars to implement any of that. So, or you don't have a head coach that is already at Hall of Fame status in Eric Spoelstra. So I found that those little things interesting, but definitely go check that out. That was a really, really good podcast. Really good listen for any NBA junkie out there. Matt, before we get to our mailbag questions and our voicemails, and you can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Want to remind our listeners about rockauto.com, a great sponsor for the Locked On Podcast Network and a great sponsor here at Locked On Bulls. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. I was talking to you guys about how I desperately need to get my brakes changed. I keep putting that off and keep putting that off, but that is one thing that I definitely will look at RockAuto.com to replace them. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same auto parts? Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Matt, let's get into the loneliest of voicemails. We only got one today, but I thought it was a pretty good one. So let's jump right into that. Here we go.
Hey, Lockdown Bulls guys. This is RT Blues, Rene in Prague. And yeah, I know Matt blocked me on Twitter because I trolled on John. But I got to say, Matt, I agree with you 1,000%. The proposed bubble for the Delete 8 teams is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Why? And, you know, Jordan was naming all these venues around town and they could do this. Do you know how much money it costs the NBA to create the bubble in Orlando? Yeah, a lot. $150 million, in fact. So he named all those. What are they going to secure all those venues, create all those bubbles and all those hotels and all the? That's why they're doing it in Orlando under a dome. So that can't work. But the whole thing's ridiculous, and Matt was right. It's all about the money. They've lost so much money already. They won't have fan money, concession money, any of that. And they already took a big hit on the earlier in the year. People forget with China and Maury's comments and all that. So they're desperate, and it stinks of desperation. It's not safe. And Matt made another really good point. You got dudes in Europe, safe and sound. Oh, yeah, come back to America with the virus raging to participate in a meaningless event so the NBA doesn't quite lose as much money. Yeah, that's completely ridiculous. And the very last part of my thing is we'd have to see Boylan again, and there might be an iota of hope. No, they got to wait till the season ends. AK's not stupid. He'll fire him. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Appreciate the call, Renee, all the way out in Prague. Renee interacts with us on Twitter a lot, but this is a good point, and he does bring up a good point about the idea that the amount of money it's going to cost financially for them to put together a Delete 8 bubble, and whether they can weigh that with the factors of how much money it's going to cause them to lose if they don't bring anything back. And Matt, I will repeat this, the same that we talked about yesterday, is how much money is the NBA going to lose if they don't do this? And what was the main driver behind this? What I was talking about wasn't the main driver. The main driver of this is essentially to get these teams to their minimum TV contracts. Those TV contracts aren't met yet, which means the NBA is withstanding to lose not tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars just from one season. So you want to talk about how much money it's going to cost for this this season to be put together as far as a Delete 8 goes? Yeah, it may cost them millions of dollars, but in the end, it may save them hundreds of millions of dollars in lost revenue if they don't do this. And I'm not saying that it's going to actually happen, but to think that it's crazy that they're trying to come up with a plan, not only from the money side of things, but also from the potential, I guess, integrity of the actual game. You're going to lose all of that in the near future if you don't do something, or if you don't have plans in place to do something. So I can understand that point. It does cost a lot, and the NBA is having to spend a ton of money, but they're going to have to think about this. This is all things that the NBA is considering, but believe me, they're withstanding to lose a lot more money if they don't do anything and things go wrong in Florida and they let all of these teams kind of linger. So I would think about that too closely.
Yeah, I do think the point Renee brings up that is valid is that the NBA got itself off to a pretty rocky start this season with Daryl Morey, one of the better known executives in the league, one of the better respected executives in the league, making, you know, these questionable comments that were, you know, deemed questionable because he was trying to take a stand on something. The NBA as a business knows just how much of the value of their business comes from fans and money in China. And, you know, an NBA exec making political comments about China and the shitstorm that followed did not exactly get this NBA season off to a great start financially. That is 100% true. So coupling with that, all of the revenue lost because of the pandemic, I mean, the NBA is in a world of hurt financially. As far as the possibilities of what they could do to recoup some of those losses, their options are limited. And it is a big reason why they are, you know, trying to make this Orlando bubble happen. And here we are, we're on, you know, day two or three of teams arriving in this bubble. And we have like NBA players Instagramming their meals and shit in their hotel rooms and stuff. But we'll see how it goes. But they're trying to recoup gigantic losses. As for the Delete 8, it's not necessarily impossible to make all of the same steps happen. As Michelle Roberts of the Players Association has said, is vitally important if they were to do that. And Jordan, what you were bringing up with the idea of maybe, hey, doing this at Wintrust Arena, if they wanted to do this in or around Chicago, is that it would be a, I guess, similarly manageable bubble to what they're doing in Orlando, and maybe even more so, knowing that it is a sporting complex that has a hotel attached to it. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, there's your bubble right there if they really wanted to do it. Now, clearly, you're probably not recouping as much of your financial losses with the Delete 8, you know, tourney or whatever they would do to do that as you are with a fully fledged, full schedule, best of seven across the board NBA playoff, because we all know how much people, you know, fork out for advertising with NBA playoffs that get amazing ratings. The Delete 8, probably not get those ratings.
I think you're right, but I would also push it as far as this too. And actually, before I say that, I think your point is exact. We got to keep reiterating that, that the Players Association, Michelle Roberts, she said every step that they've taken in Florida has to be taken if they're going to pull this out. While it might be a little bit easier because you only have 8 teams as opposed to 22, and you're not dealing with a place like Disney, which is also trying to figure out how they're going to run their own business, I think it might be a little bit easier, and they can learn from the mistakes that they've made in Orlando. But I also do, I hear what Renee is saying by saying that the NBA is having to spend millions and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars to start this. Why would they do it with their bottom 8 teams that may not drive a whole lot of revenue? I'm thinking about places like McCormick Place. What about McCormick Place? It's a massive, massive empty building right now. We know here in Chicago, there's
a couple months ago, we were anticipating needing it as an emergency hospital area because of overflow in Chicago's hospitals. Thankfully, that did not turn out to be the case.
Right. So that's another place, too, with, like, I'm thinking about, like, if DePaul says, hey, you know what, we're still trying to figure out what we're doing, and we're going to need all the facilities, and we can't afford to rent that out to you in the fall, that might close down some of these places that I was talking about, like UIC or Loyola, any of these places with facilities that can be up to NBA ranks. Well, if you can't do any of that at all, and they say, you know what, no, we're not going to lease out the building to the NBA, McCormick Place is still sitting there and empty, Matt. And we know that trade shows are not going on for the rest of the year here. Everything's basically been canceled for the summer and the fall. So you've got a big ass, huge building alongside the lake, just minutes from a bunch of different hotels that you could quarantine these guys in and essentially create the same thing that's going on in the wide world of sports. Now, that's the best case scenario possible. And who knows, Matt, like you had said, who knows that maybe in 3 or 4 months, things don't go as positive here in the city of Chicago or in Illinois. And maybe Illinois does need the McCormick Place to open up as a de facto hospital again. So that's probably things that the state is thinking about as well. So it's all on the table. That's all I would say, is it's all on the table. And to bring it back to the financial side of it too, it's like, I think we should also think about how much is the NBA set to lose should they not bring any of this back, and should it all just be shut down? And same with the 8 teams. I mean, they're ready to lose they already lost $500 million in gate revenue, and they're about to lose another $200 million in non-gate revenue, playoff games, TV contracts if they can't get to the minimum TV games allotted for each year. That's a lot of money. It's almost $1 billion the NBA is going to lose from one season. So I get the spending, but on the opposite side, they're standing to lose a whole hell of a lot more money if they just sit and be complacent and do nothing. And again, they got to listen to their players. And there's a lot of players that are saying, just from these 8 teams alone, that want to come back and train. And they're all in different circumstances as well. So I think that has to be factored in as well.
I think so. I absolutely think so. And to wrap up that voicemail, Renee, I stand by my decision to block you, man. We appreciate you being a loyal listener, longtime listener of Locked On Bulls, but you can't come at my guy, John Sabine, and call for him to be fired on Twitter and not expect me to stand up for him and draw that line in the sand. So appreciate you, being a fan of our content, but guess what? John Sabine, very good at what he does. If you had said the same thing about Jordan Malley in this year podcast of ours, would have done the same thing. So I don't know, man. Maybe John and his comedy and his basketball takes aren't your cup of tea. But don't go after a man's job like that. And that's all I'll say about that.
John had me dying on Twitter yesterday. He posted a meme from NBA on TNT that I'm not even going to describe.
Oh, about the things on the backs of the jerseys. Oh,
it was
how he photoshopped some of them. One of them was like Chevy Truck Month.
I started reading down the list of it, and I'm like, okay, this seems normal. So I was like, oh, wait a second.
One of them was just White Claw.
So go check that out. All right, let's get to some texts and voicemails, or some texts. We just hit on a voicemail. If you guys want to drop us either of those, 331-979-1369, and you can do it at any time of the day or night. If you're listening to this podcast, you work overnight, it's 2 a.m. and you got a burning Bulls thought, you can drop our voicemail and text message line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Matt, I found this one interesting, and I had to shoot a response back on Friday night because it got the wheels in my head spinning. So this is from Aaron in California. He says, "Hey guys, is it just me or has the Bulls Twitter page starting to hype Chris Dunn up over the last few weeks? It makes me wonder if they envision him sticking around. Just a thought. Thanks, guys." And I shot back, I said, I thought the exact same thing. Think about where we were a year ago with Chris Dunn, Matt. Off all of the Bulls campaigns, Otto Porter slides into that spot, and all of a sudden it looks like Chris Dunn, it might be on the outs. And then last week, at the end of the week, I see the Bulls promoting Chris Dunn as being a left out of the All-NBA defensive teams. So it makes me wonder going into a contract year if this is just a slow start to helping campaign Chris Dunn and see what kind of value is out there. Teams do this all the time too. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is funny that gearing up for this season, Chris Dunn's face was nowhere to be found on the Bulls, social media presence on Twitter, on their official like media guide, all that stuff. It's like Chris Dunn photoshopped out, Otto Porter photoshopped in. And I think there were reasons for that, in that the Bulls made a big trade, getting rid of the failed Jabari Parker experiment, moving on from Bobby, who thankfully turned down that lucrative offer they gave him a year prior, and getting a wing that they desperately needed in Otto Porter Jr., and trying to pump him up and say, hey, this is a guy, he's a veteran leader, a quality player, a position of need for us. And meanwhile, we're excited about the rookie Coby White we just drafted. We're excited about Zach LaVine. And Chris Dunn looked to be a guy that was on his way out. Right? We were, you know, talking about how shocked we would be if coming into the final stage, you know, if we had passed the 19-20 trade deadline and Chris Dunn was still on the roster, that we would be shocked by that. Even knowing that his trade value might be minimal, but the Bulls were ready to move on based on everything we saw. But I mean, he's this season, in this disastrous season where they end the season 20 games under 500, propping up Chris Dunn's defensive performance. And I'm not saying that he wasn't a solid defensive player this year. He got talk as maybe, you know, if there were like second team all defense, not quite all defensive team, but you know, at least getting a little bit of credit for that, despite being on an awful team and leading the league or close to leading the league in things like steals per game, steals per 36, steal percentage, all that stuff. But the dude was just such a disaster offensively that a lot of that canceled out for me. So as far as him getting a little bit more attention from Bulls social media now, I would say that things are pretty even across the board based on what I've seen. I don't think Chris Dunn's getting extra attention compared to other players on Bulls social media. They're praising everyone on Bulls social media right now because we're in this weird vacuum where the Bulls season is over. We've made a front office change, but that front office hasn't made any changes to the roster yet. And so they're treating everyone with love. They put out like a Felicio highlight reel for his birthday yesterday, for crying out loud.
Oh, man. Oh, I didn't even see that. I'm going to have to go back and look at the replies on that one. But yeah, for KD, I think this is normal, though. If you take the Bulls aspect out of it and you take Chris Dunn out of it and just put the scenario with any other team, right? A guy that's going in to the final year of his contract, the Bulls are going to have to decide long term what they're going to do with him. It's going to be weird, and he's going to have the qualifying offer too. So once the trade deadline, or once the offseason hits, quote unquote, that very short window, whether he decides to pick that up or not, and then ultimately if he decides to decline it, the Bulls can still bring him back as he'll be a restricted free agent and they can match. So we'll see about that, but maybe the Bulls bring him back on a one-year deal, or he does accept the qualifying offer and says, hey, I'm going to try to ball out and see what I can do in next year's offseason. And when things maybe will be hopefully a little bit more normal than they will be in this offseason. So it's also too, like, It's a good plan for the Bulls. You start creating buzz around guys. I mean, the Bulls did this when they were getting ready to trade Bobby Portis. He seemingly was on Bulls social media every single night, and rightfully so, too. I mean, the guy was balling out. Same thing with Nico Mirotic when the Bulls traded him 2 years ago. That six-week run where Nico was just absolutely on fire, he was all over social media. The buzz was crazy. And I think it helped create attention. And to some extent, it helps create attention and buzz about these guys. And teams know that. Teams know that when they go to negotiate or make trades, is part of it is fan buzz too and what people are hearing on social media. And that all factors in to guys' overall value. So this can't hurt if the Bulls are saying, you know what, prop Chris Dunn a little bit up, make teams more aware, make fan bases more aware of him. Going into next season, maybe he becomes more marketable than where he was maybe say a year ago.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. And here's the other thing, because when you talk about Chris Dunn and his qualifying offer, I think you also have to talk about Shaq Harrison and his qualifying offer. And it was Josh Jay, who does the Bullish Hoops podcast, who's actually based out in New Zealand, but a young up-and-comer on Bulls Twitter, who was going over some like player review stuff a few days ago. I think it was like late last week. And he was talking about Shaq Harrison's defensive stats this from this season. And here I'll just run them through real quick. 98th percentile in passing lane defense, 97th percentile in steals per 75, 98th percentile in deflections per 75, 91st percentile in defensive miles covered, and 52.5% of the time on the floor, he was guarding primary creators. So maybe not as flashy as Dunn's steal numbers, which, you know, Shaq Harrison, quality steal guy as well. When you think about what Shaq Harrison gives you on the defensive end and what Chris Dunn gives you on the defensive end and their respective limitations on the offensive end, and you think about the fact that one of those guys' qualifying offer is nearly 10 times the other guy's, to me, like, if I'm the Bulls and I'm thinking, okay, well, a solid defensive guard off the bench to continue building this roster, we're going to keep one of these guys, I'm taking Shaq, man. Like, no questions asked, I'm taking Shaq. And that's coming from someone who really believed in Chris Dunn when that Jimmy Butler trade was made. I had high hopes for Chris Dunn, but I've seen what I've seen and I've changed my mind.
It's weird, too, because Shaq Harrison and Chris Dunn are about the same age. Shaq Harrison's 26. Chris Dunn, I believe, is 25. And as far as cost goes, yeah, if the Bulls don't feel like that they want to spend the money that it may cost to retain Chris Dunn long term, Shaq Harrison's your next best option. And Matt, I've been talking about Shaq Harrison even not from this season, but for the season before when we were talking about whether or not they were going to bring Shaq Harrison or Ryan Arcidiacono back. And it's like, which reserve guard is better for the Bulls' future? And we were going back and forth. And I kept saying, man, I know Archie's been getting a lot of the attention, but Shaq Harrison is doing everything the Bulls love on the defensive side of the ball. So want them to bring both of those guys back. Sure enough, they did. And Shaq Harrison has had a weird season, man. Just looking back the 43 games he played in, he started in 10, but he would go stretches of 2, 3, 4 games and not getting any playing time to all of a sudden being thrown in there for 23, 26, 28 minutes. So he's had a difficult run himself too, where he's been asked to do a lot and then all of a sudden do a very, very little. But I do agree with you that if Chris Dunn starts, if the market starts to go at $8, $9, $10, $11 million for Chris Dunn, we might be talking about hey, KD, it didn't work out here. Hopefully your career works out somewhere else. But we've got another guy that might be a little bit cheaper.
If he gets a multi-year offer that's 10 mil or more per, oh my God, I'm saying, hey, thanks, man. Here's a bus ticket. Like, bye.
Is Satoransky worth more than KD is?
Oh, man. Speaking of disappointments.
Seriously.
I do. I think if used properly, Satoransky can be more useful than KD.
They both have terrible offensive issues. And that was exposed, and Satoransky had some nice games bouncing back towards the end of the season, but they both struggled mightily. And he's not the three-point shooter, too, that we thought he was going to be. And again, maybe that goes back to what Jim Boylan has been doing with him, but I don't know. Maybe you're right, but $10 million right now after the season we saw out of Satoransky. And look, the Bulls had everything went wrong for the Bulls last season, so I try not to put too much against him on that. But yeah, if KD gets something around $10 million, I'm with you. I'm probably saying, yeah, you know what? We're not in the position to pay you, and we're to pay you that much and to keep you around long term. So,
I mean, let's just, and NBA shifting for, you know, towards offensive, you know, priority anyway. And yeah, you need a couple of good defensive stoppers and ideally guys who can guard multiple positions that are elite defensively on your team. But offense wins over defense in the NBA pretty much 99% of the time now. Who do Bulls fans want to see more of next season? Chris Dunn or Coby White? To me, like, that's the simple question right there. And it should be a pretty simple answer.
Just to kind of follow up, Shaq Harrison, the last 14 games that were played before the shutdown, Shaq Harrison had 6 games where he scored in double-digit figures. Before that, the rest of the season, he only had 2 games where he scored in double digits, and that was very, very early on in the season, talking like the first 10, 15 games of the season. So there might be some optimism towards Shaq Harrison and what he can do on the offensive side of the ball, but yeah, I'm with you. I want to see Coby White over Chris Dunn, and that might negate things if Chris Dunn stays here long term. But I guess we'll just see what happens, right?
And some might say, like, you know, Chris Dunn, play him with Coby White so Chris Dunn's defense can cover up for Kobe's struggles on the defensive end early in his career while Coby can create. It's like, okay, but then once again, you're just having Chris Dunn sit on the perimeter where no one has to guard him while Coby White's creating on the offensive end. You're wasting a player on the offensive end, Chris Dunn.
Last question real quick before we get out of here, Matt. This comes from Christian in Charlotte, North Carolina. He said, we've heard reports that the Elite Eight teams could be in their own bubble in Chicago in September. Do you think we'll see any improvement from Boylan's coaching with this long layoff for him to reflect, and now that the new front office has given him their vision for how they want to play, how they want the team to play? Also, what Bulls players do you see opting out of this quote-unquote Elite Eight? Thanks, guys. You want to touch on the Boylan thing first? Do you believe Boylan could return as some type of new coach and we see like a rebirthing of Jim Boylan?
No. Simply no. Yes, they have a long layoff where they could theoretically implement some new things, assuming that all players who are relevant to the Bulls' new vision decide that they want to play in meaningless games. Maybe they all do, but I'm saying there's a good chance that at least a couple of these players, especially key players, and oh, I don't know, say Lauri Markkanen, who's safe at home in Finland right now, you know, Satoransky, are like, if players opt out and say thanks but no thanks, and then even if they say thanks but no thanks to like doing some team organized activities and training camp stuff, you're not going to implement it. And how many of those players would also say, if Jim's the guy who you're tasking with implementing this system to us, we'll get nowhere because Jim installed this new offensive system this season that didn't really fit the personnel he had and insisted upon not really changing anything as the Bulls were sinking and sinking and sinking and sinking. So, yes, like we keep hearing, oh, AK has empowered Jim Boylan for now, blah, 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 blah. I am still sticking to my guns that AK is not going to spend too much of his time and energy trying to explain to the human brick of a head coach, that is Jim Boylan, everything that he wants to do basketball-wise, because Jim Boylan will not be here next season.
I think people understand what we're trying to build. I think people can see that too.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot more guys opt out if, in fact, Jim Boylan is the guy taking you in through these meaningless games. But hell, man, I could be wrong about that. As far as I'm with you on everything that you're saying about Boylan too. I think the most realistic thing for Boylan coming back would just be like a quasi-training camp where there's no games going on, yet they're allowing these teams to work out together through a quote-unquote off-season while the playoffs and the NBA Finals is still going on. And then at that point, at the end of the season, maybe you see Boylan fired when the Finals are over. But any type of games that even would be televised, I can't imagine the Bulls are going to be like, yeah, you know what, Boylan's going to coach you for about 8 or 9 games, and then we're going to fire him. So anything that he teaches you or tells you over the next couple of months, yeah, just scrap that by about October or November when you bring a new guy in. So it's tough to do that talking to players. But a percentage-wise of players, do you think there's any guys on this Bulls roster that would opt out of this Delete 8 comeback? My guess, first guess, would be Satoransky, one who was completely against having this season and just said shut things down because he wanted to go spend time with his family and he had to stay here to figure out when they were going to actually start. I also think Lauri Markkanen will probably opt out. I wouldn't imagine why he would want to come back and until there's an actual season and he has to stay here long term. Anybody else here in the U.S.? Probably guys that are here in Chicago would go if they want to train and play. But man, like Zach LaVine could even make a convincing argument of why he wouldn't come back because he's got a semi-professional training facility in his own damn backyard. So for him to come back, I don't know, unless he wants to get real games in.
Yeah. And the one thing that I think maybe we haven't thought about or certainly haven't touched on yet is in favor of players saying, you know what, I'll do this. I'll be a team player. I'll come back. I'll play these meaningless games or I'll do these training camps or whatever because they want to make the right impression on the new front office. They want to prove to the new front office guys that they care and that they are professionals who put the team first before themselves. Now, that's just kind of like a general always you want players like that, team first guys, you know, high character guys, as you know, other until recently, other Bulls people would phrase it. But these are strange times. I think these times don't necessarily have the same weight of, okay, are you a you first guy or a team first guy? If you decide, hey, there's a global pandemic going on, and I'm not going to risk myself, and more importantly, the safety of my family and my loved ones to play some meaningless basketball games. I'm also not keen on the idea of a potentially career-threatening injury playing in meaningless games. So there are still good excuses for players who might want to opt out. If they opt in, I think one factor will be, hey, I know that these aren't ideal circumstances for anyone, and we know there's injury risk, and we know there's health risk. But for those players who still really want to build something here in Chicago, and I think that Zach and Lowry are those guys, they've both said they like being in Chicago. They want to stay here. You know, Lowry, you know, there was some headlines earlier this season about how unhappy he was. Cowley with the stuff about like, hey, you know, if Jim doesn't go, Lowry wants out. Well, we're all thinking now with a new front office that Jim will go and that Lowry will hopefully find himself, you know, a new peace of mind and a bigger, better role in this team. Then that might lead them to say, okay, let's do this as a team and let's take the risks together. That to me is the only real factor that maybe we had talked about as far as like what are the benefits and what are the, you know, detractions that the players might be weighing when they think, okay, what am I gaining by doing this? And the respect of the new front office might be on the minds of some of those young players.
We understand better than anyone.
We want Jim to be our head coach next season.
The other thing too, think about it in the way that if they do this, I'm taking it one step further too, Matt, because I think that's a good point. What about if guys say, you know what, I'm not 100% comfortable with going out there playing meaningless games, but I do want to be a part of the team. So maybe Zach LaVine says, yeah, you know what, I'm going to come back to Chicago. I'll do training and I'll do workouts and all of that. But when it comes to these Delete 8 games, I'm just going to sit on the side. Sort of like Bradley Beal has talked about and Kyrie Irving. Both of those guys said, hey, you know what, I'm probably going to go to the Orlando bubble, be with my teammates, be with my team, but I'm not playing. Same thing with Durant. So that we could see maybe a scenario where that happens even too. It's like, I'm not going to risk myself during these games that are meaningless, but I also want to be a part of the team, be a part of the conversations, just be in, as Gar Forman would love to put it,
in this building
every single day. So I could see that happening even too.
I could see that. I could definitely see that.
I just hope that the front office, and more so me as a personal, as a Bulls fan, I'm not going to put anything against any of these guys if they say, you know what, nah, I'm going to wait till November, December when we actually have to come back for a full season next year. I don't feel comfortable. I'm not going to hold anything against any of the players that say, I'm good right now. Oh, I'm good.
Yeah, not a thing. Any and all players, whether it's the Orlando bubble or potentially a Delete 8 bubble, who say, thanks but no thanks, I am not judging any of them one iota. Right now, everyone has to do what they think is best for themselves and their families.
I would agree with that. Thank you to everybody who dropped us voicemails, text messages, all of that. And we're going to get to more of those too. We just continuously have a bunch of them. And you guys bring up good questions, so we always wanted to flesh them out as much as we can. So that's why we only get to, at sometimes we only get to like one voicemail and one text. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Keep dropping us voicemails and text messages. Whatever it is, you want to talk about the decision, some memories that you had there. You want to talk about this Delete 8 bubble possibility, some of your thoughts, whether it be positive or negative. Any questions too, send it to us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Drop it for us at 331-979-1369 or on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know. LeBron, what's your decision?
In this fall, man, this is very tough. And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to
Locked On Bulls.
Not one championship.
Not two.
LeBron, tell us about that.
Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com